Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss. And before we get into our episode about whitewashing in Hollywood, which I am going to warn you, it's a long one. You might need to pause this and listen to it over a couple of trips in your car or however you listen to the episode. We went on for a long time, but I could not bear to cut any of it. So you got a 2-hour podcast ahead of you. Sorry. Anyway, before we get into that, I just want to thank my patrons. Thank you so much, all of the patrons that have been supporting me from the beginning all the way till now. You make it possible for me to keep doing this, and you made it possible for me to get this out this month instead of delaying it again and again and again. Editing 2 hours of people swearing, it gets kind of frustrating. Thanks to my guests. Anyway, thank you to the patrons for making me get off my butt and getting this out to you. Without them, you'd be waiting another week or two. So thank you to Shane Poole, Aaron Jackson, Doc Blue, Patrick Scafito, Jen Hansen, Harold Whalen, Ian Swallow, Aurora Lee, Beth, Kinsey, Susanna, Melissa A. Bartell, Lynette McFadden, Susan, and Frank. Thank you so much, all of you who have supported me. And I have now gathered everyone's picks for their original art. And that should be coming out to you. I should be mailing it out in the next couple of weeks. I should have them out before Balticon. If I am going to be seeing you at Balticon, then I will deliver them in person. Thank you so much. Enjoy the next 2 hours. Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got another episode of Nutty Bites for you. Today, we're going to be talking about whitewashing. And with me today, I have my usual co-host.
Hi, I'm white. I mean French. I mean, my name is Tech.
And I have got Shane Poole.
Hi.
I have Claire LaFar.
Hello. I'm white, and I don't know where I come from.
And playing Jason Banks will be Channing Tatum for this episode. Mr. Gregory Banks. Jason Gregory Banks, sorry.
You know, if I had such an origin story of being a male stripper before becoming one of the heartthrobs of Hollywood, I would say go ahead with Channing Tatum.
But you don't.
Now you're just one of the heartthrobs of podcasting.
Indeed.
Absolutely one of the heartthrobs of podcasting, and I might say my man crush.
Ooh.
It's guy love.
Da, da, da. You should use that as clickbait.
Yeah. Yeah. The heartthrob of podcasting, Jason Banks. You should put that on your Facebook now, like under titles.
You won't believe what he said next.
You don't believe what he said about Channing Tatum next.
So we're going to be talking about whitewashing because this is a horrible, horrible thing. I think John Oliver...
recent stuff about it.
Oh, yeah. John Oliver covered it best. Yeah. Doing a whole segment. I'll try to link to that in the show notes. The Oscars are pretty white. Why? Because nobody's writing roles for people of color. And when there are roles for people of color, they're putting white people in those roles.
By the way, as a fan of Chris Rock, I'm just going to come out and say he did a miraculous job of navigating those waters.
Agreed.
Did he host or something? I don't pay attention.
He hosted the Oscars. Uh-huh. And so he had to handle all of that. And it was wonderfully done. He actually introduced the Oscars as welcome to the 88th annual White People's Choice Awards.
Nice.
He went back and forth as well between, like, I don't know if you agree, Jason, he went back and forth between attacking the white audience and attacking the black audience as well. It was very balanced.
It was very balanced, very, very good.
In a good and bad way, yeah.
And he also promoted Girl Scout cookies, and I am a fan of Thin Mints.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
how could you not be a fan? We have
an order coming in. We ordered through my niece. My sister just holds them, puts them in the freezer, and brings them up with her. Because I'm sorry, Canadians, but Girl Scout cookies are so much better than Girl Guide cookies. I said
we don't
it.
Have Girl Scout cookies? Do we, Shane? I don't think we do.
No, we don't.
Ah, oh, that's horrible.
It sucks.
You have Girl Scouts.
I know. Why aren't they making us cookies?
Jen literally just opened my door. Like, she was like,
are you talking about Girl Scouts?
And she sticks her head in just like, are you talking about Girl Scout cookies?
I love you, Jen.
I love you, Jen.
Maddie and Tech say they love you.
I love you too.
Yay, Jen's on this podcast. She sounds horribly sick.
She literally just woke up. I literally just woke up.
Nice. So let's talk about whitewashing. I want to start with some pretty egregious recent examples. Prince of Egypt and Gods of Egypt, is that the name of it?
Gods of Egypt.
Yeah. Gods of Egypt, starring Nikolai Caster-Waldau, the Danish soap opera star, as, Set?
hey, don't forget, we had its predecessor, where Christian Bale played Moses.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the Prince of Egypt, right?
You don't even, no, it was...
No, it was
Exodus.
Exodus, that's Exodus, it. Guys. Prince of Egypt is the name of the animated movie Prince that actually Egypt, does yeah, it basically. Right.
Oh, actually, yes. No.
But even though
Egypt, the live action movie, had Jake Gyllenhaal as a Persian.
Oh, you mean Prince of Persia?
Prince of Persia.
Yeah, that was based on a video game.
Egypt, like, Gerard Butler doesn't even do an accent. He's like in Egypt going, okay, Lulu, I'm Horus, or whatever it says. And you're like, dude, like, you're the most Scottish bloke I've ever heard.
Well, dude, that's one of the running jokes on a podcast I listen to called We Hate Movies.
We Hate Movies is great. Yeah,
They just did White House or Olympus Has Fallen or whatever. Whichever one it was with Gerard Butler playing a member of the Secret Service. And so they're just like, yeah, he's supposed to be some guy named Michael something or other, but he's just going around talking like this. It's 300 times.
I'm in the American Secret Service, don't you know? Like, you're not American at all.
I'm here to protect you, Aaron Eckhart, the president. Like, I was just like, oh my God. Like, oh, it's so bad.
It's horrible. And I don't understand why. There are so many good actors of color that they could cast and unknowns that they can cast.
Well, don't worry. They're about to Furtada. Shit their pants because it's confirmed by Stephen King. Idris Elba is Roland.
I know. Yes. I can't wait. I'm so excited. So let's talk a little bit.
I'm upset that we won't have Idris Elba as Bond, though, because I want him as Bond.
I agree.
That would be good. He's a so great good. Actor.
Well, and Burrito Ian Fleming about his stance on that. So just saying that right now.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention as well. I've just remembered. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard about the recent thing, because there's going to be the Harry Potter play in London. Have you heard about
that? Yes, I'm so excited.
Yeah, which sounds amazing. But there was a big controversy over that when they cast the actress to play Hermione.
Yeah, and isn't it the one from Orange is the New Black?
I don't know. The only actor I recognise was the one who's playing Harry, because he's done a lot of theatre in London. But there was a massive controversy, and like J.K. Rowling just came out and was like, "I never said the character was white." Like,
yeah, exactly.
Well,
remember the huge debacle over the Hunger Games when they put out Rue, and Rue was black, and the author goes,
She was black in the books.
Black in the books. And they're like...
And she really was black in the books.
Yeah.
Like, she...
In the books with Hermione, the only things it said about her, I think J.K. Rowling pointed out, was that she had dark brown hair. I think she had brown eyes. And her hair was
frizzy hair. Yeah.
Yeah, frizzy hair. There you go.
Yep.
Like,
it was the same thing with Hunger Games. They said that she had dark skin.
Yeah.
And then, and I remember seeing some of the Twitter comments about, well, they said she had dark skin, but they never said she was an N-bomb.
Yeah.
And really, people, we went that far? I mean, is that where you shut off? I mean, it was a good movie.
And the thing is, it's Katniss is not supposed to be, at least she's the way Asian. I read it, she's not supposed to be white.
She's multi. Yeah. Here's the thing I will give those books, as I do not like them. I mainly don't like them because of the fact that Katniss is the main character. I feel she's a very unlikable person. But what I give them credit for is that they openly say this is a post-apocalyptic dystopian world where everyone's been banging everybody. So there really isn't white people left. The only ones who could be considered white are those in the capital, just because they are very elitist and they have very high standards of themselves to where they would not want to mix the breeds, so to speak. And
also, they have the whole fashion thing. So, like, I was talking to someone about this, like you were saying, Jason, they could have, like, the fashion thing, like, years ago when it was fashionable to bleach your skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, it's... You're right. There's no real race.
Outside of the capital.
Yeah.
I have a quote from Ridley Scott here.
Mm.
Yes.
Talking about the 2014...
Oh, I know what quote you're going to say. Is it the Muhammad quote?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I bet there's a couple quotes that he...
It's going to make us hate Ridley Scott. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jay.
I already hate Ridley Scott because of Prometheus, so...
talking about is the 2014 Exodus Gods and Kings, quote, would never been can't make a film of this budget and say my lead actor is Mohammed so-and-so and such-and-such. I am not going to get financed.
Now, I want to talk about this for a bit. And there's a little bit more to that quote when you read more into it, when he talks about how they get these multi-million dollar budgets, but they are strained. And these producers are being held to these budgets. A movie house says, I have so many dollars, you're going to make me a movie. And these producers and directors are having to go to other countries to get tax credits to make their budget. So this movie he was talking about, he was filming in Spain to get the tax credit from the Spanish government to make this movie. And if he had to go to his financial backers and say, I've got, you know, Mohammed so-and-so and Lakshmi so-and-so playing these roles, give me bajillions of dollars. It points to the fact that the problem is deeper than just the audience. It's the entire industry is racist towards whitewashing. It's not just us. It's not me, Mr. Canadian white guy, who has a problem with seeing people of different races in movies. It's the entire industry itself is racist. And there's only one thing that's going to break it. And that's us willingly wanting to break it. It requires one financial backer, one promoter, and one audience who is willing to make the movie, watch the movie, like the movie, and then pay to watch the movie again.
And I think it actually includes a couple of other things. Like, for instance, it includes us not going to see Gods of Egypt, which, by the way,
which I saw for free. So
I can't have Muhammad, but I can have Brenton Thwala. That's however you say it.
So
nobody knows who he is.
How bad was it?
It's very bad. It could be one of those. It's close to being one of those films that you sit and watch with a bunch of friends, get drunk, and laugh at, like that kind of film.
That's but how bad it is.
Really bad. The CGI is about on level with The Mummy, and that was like 15 years
ago. At least The Mummy had humor, you know.
It's not good at all.
You know what? I'm just gonna put it out here right now. Brendan Fraser, not that bad of an actor.
No, he's an amazing actor.
You give him a comedic role, he's pretty good in it. Just don't make him get serious.
Are you kidding? Did you not see Gods and Monsters? Did you not see School Ties? He is an amazing actor.
I'll take him as a comedy role. It's kind of like Will Smith. Canadian. Like Will Smith, when he gets serious, don't get me wrong, he's good. But
you just like comedies more.
I can't get over Will Smith's Messiah complex.
I am legend.
I really don't like comedies because generally my sense of humor is not addressed in most comedies because people get really offended by my sense of humor. I'm a Dave Chappelle, Key and Peele, Paul Mooney, you know, Red Fox, and
Boondocks,
Richard Pryor type of comedy. Which is why
I'm kind of the same, Jason, but I just have a very dark sense of humor, so I generally find like dark comedies much more funnier than mainstream comedies. I just don't really find that funny.
There's a show, a friend of mine introduced me to this weird British television show. It was about these hangmen, and it's a weird little sketch comedy show, and I can't think of the name of it to save my life.
I don't know. Shane, do you know that one?
No idea.
It's like these two British dudes, and they're going around, and it's just them, like, doing terrible things to each other, but at the same time, they're randomly like, well, time to hang this person.
Snuffbox?
I'll have to ask my boy Alex just introduced it to me the other day, and it's actually pretty funny. But it's pretty grim because, like you said, it's a very kind of dark show when it talks about their actual profession.
So you like black comedy.
Indeed.
So speaking of that, if you want to watch more, I recommend, and this is a total non sequitur that will be edited out by Nutty. Thanks, Nutty.
No, it won't.
Just to make sure she edits this out.
That was filthy.
You jerk!
Now she has to. Find a show called Black Books.
I hate you so much. That's a great book.
Black is one of my crushes. Oh.
Is he really?
Yes.
Look, so the guy from Black Books, whose name I can't remember, Claire?
Dylan Moran.
Dylan Moran. How could you not remember that?
What's his name?
Dylan Moran.
Dylan Moran, that's right. So looks a lot like a celebrity we have here in North America. And he's had a couple of TV shows. If you look him up, his name is Bam Margera.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, Bam Margera, yeah.
Looks just like him. Except more sober and not high.
Yeah.
Out of all of those, Jack
Taco
is from Jack
Taco.
Oh, my gosh, more editing.
Hey,
Taco.
This isn't a curse word.
It's yeah, it is.
I don't,
Johnny Knoxville is the highest. Sorry.
I'm staying out of this.
I hate him. I hate him so much. I think he's the biggest
unnecessary censorship
I've ever seen. And that's coming from a guy.
Okay. Being a fan who has watched all of the Jack
Taco,
I have to say my biggest crush is peace be unto him, and I'm sorry he has fallen, but I have had the biggest crush on Ryan Dunn.
Yeah, Ryan
Dunn was great. But see, that's the thing. He was funny. He was
sincere
about himself. Like, Bam brings his family into it, and it's super mean.
Yeah, but his parents are awesome. So, getting back to whitewashing, so my list is, we need to stop going to these movies and not watch them. The actors need to turn down the roles.
That's one of the big problems. See,
that's not going to happen, because Gerard Butler probably made in excess of, like, I don't know. I'll just say a nice figure, $10 million for his role in this movie. Because I'm not Gerard Butler. It was Gerard Butler, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, either way, these guys make in excess of $10 million for these roles, right? Like, they're not going to turn that down. And I'm not faulting them for that. I'm not, because it's their profession. That's what they do. They need these roles to make money.
I don't care. I'm sorry. Tilda Swinton cannot play a Thai person.
Let's try a test. Jason, here's $10 million. I need you to play Whitey McWhite guy.
See, but that's different.
You're gonna see the Dave Chappelle white face come out real quick.
Absolutely. Even better, we're gonna rename the character. It's gonna be Casper McWhite person.
See,
and you're gonna play it.
I don't mind the actors who are struggling taking roles because of that reason. But when you've got somebody who is at the top of their game, you know,
a question in relation to that, Nutty.
When Johnny Depp says, "Oh yeah, I'm 1/16th Native American. I can play Tonto
with a bird on my head."
Yeah.
Oh, you had to bring that up.
Which is also an iconic Native American character. You know
exactly.
I mean?
I blame in a Johnny Depp.
It's an iconic character.
Yeah, well, I blame Johnny Depp
about the new trailer for I don't know if you guys have seen it, for Nina, the Nina Simone film.
No,
have you seen that?
Please tell me it's not a white person playing Nina Simone.
It's not a white person, but the actress playing Nina Simone is Zoe Saldana, who is
very light,
Latina, Afro-Latina,
yep.
I think.
Yep,
and she's very light. So in the film, she's darkened her skin and is wearing a prosthetic nose.
But I also have to ask, isn't she 100 pounds too light to play Nina Simone?
Yeah, she looks very too light. I mean, the film does not look good, and I love Nina Simone.
I know, me
so
too.
Do I.
So
yeah.
I watched the trailer. But she's a renowned actress, and the film, Nina Simone was also a civil rights activist.
Yeah.
And you would think that would be a role where you would go, do you know what? I think there's another actress that
can
play this.
Well, let's not forget what they did with Stonewall.
Don't.
I mean.
You've just driven an icy icicle through my heart, Nutty, at the moment.
You had people of color at the forefront of this civil rights movement, and they were focused on white people. You know, it's like, guys, no.
Made up white guy. Mm-hmm. The film, who wasn't even real. Yeah, it's
remove the transgender character. you know, who's in the actual history of the Stonewall riots. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I've got a picture of Nina Simone up right next to Zoe Saldana. Does that look even
they
close?
Look nothing alike.
And I can understand, well, you know, you want the best actor, yada, yada, yada. You can't tell me there's not another woman in Hollywood that can play this role. I can think of five.
See, I hate to do this. I'm gonna go here because me and a certain African American, very very high up there, African American actress and social figure, we've fallen out over recent years. But Oprah Winfrey, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Your burritos girl. To Oprah and her loving bread. Just gotta say that.
Have you ever seen? I don't know if it's possible. Has anyone ever seen like a train wreck in slow motion, like
yes.
super slow mo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that was Oprah. Like she came out of the gate swinging. Hi, I'm overweight. I'm black, and I'm proud of it. And she's made some fantastic films. By the way, she's been married to Danny Glover multiple times.
Yeah, I know.
but it's like that type of actress just can't get work done anymore outside of silly black comedies or
no. And if they need an overweight black woman, what they do is they take a skinny black male comic and put him in a fat suit and make him a black chick.
Exactly. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh,
Tyler Perry, I'm looking at you.
It's terrible. I can't think of the actress's name, but she was in the last thing I remember seeing her in was Snowpiercer. I'm gonna look her up. It's terrible. I can't remember her name, but she's always in stuff and she's amazing. Like gets constant work in every genre.
But there's a couple of them. There's a lady who does a show.
They're character actors. Yeah.
How to Get Away with Murder?
Yes. What's her name?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Claire, you were thinking of Octavia Spencer?
Yes, Octavia Spencer.
There you
yes,
go.
Thank you.
And there's the other lady who does, who did the movie Black and White. It's where she was like going against a guy for custody of her biracial granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
How
to Get Away with Murder, you're thinking of Viola Davis, who I would have cast it for Nina Simone.
And both of those have won Oscars or been Oscar nominated, haven't they? Like Viola Davis won an Oscar. Octavia Spencer, did she win? But she was nominated definitely for The Help.
I know. I think Black and White was nominated and so was The Help. But you have those. They remind me of a young Oprah Winfrey back when she was doing.
Octavia Spencer won.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
That's good. That makes me happy. By the way, that was what, 2012?
12.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was almost half a decade ago.
But that's the thing. Like, what roles are we seeing for people of color? It's slave stories. It's The Help. It's things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
The guy that took over The Daily Show, Trevor, what's his name? Trevor Noah. Trevor Noah and Lupita Nyong'o did a thing about whitewashing in Hollywood. And they talked about the only role that a black person is going to win in Hollywood now, it has to be a period piece. It has to be something about either affirmative action or like slave stories. And
civil rights.
Or slave stories. So, Lupita mentioned during the thing that for some reason it has to be about a black woman in a Victorian dress. No one knows what it is, but it has to be a black woman in a Victorian dress, and that'll win awards.
Well, like the thing,
that was what Belle was. Yeah.
The thing for me is though, it's in order for them to win awards, they have to see the black person being oppressed. And that is disgusting.
Oh no.
I think more it's that they have to see, it's almost like they have to. My problem with it is they,
I love how we're all like talking over the black guy.
Be oppressed, Jason. Be oppressed. it has to be a black actor or actress playing a black character. And by that, I mean you can't just have... Like, one of my big problems, I was actually chatting to Peter Shinkoda about this, who's a Canadian Asian actor. And I was saying, you know, my big problem is just, like... I would just like to see a big budget romantic comedy where it's not two white people and it just doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? That kind of film. Or film where they just, it's not even an issue.
Yeah.
Well, you got half of that in a film called Hitch with Will Smith. Mind you, he wasn't the titular romantic character. He was trying to help Kevin James, but that's what you got with that movie. That movie's,
and he's Will Smith. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of different. It's like in terms of instead of doing like a, you know, the latest like freaking Nicholas Sparks movie, which I hate, by the way. But you know, these sloppy films, and just getting like two pretty white people or whatever, then just cast the best actor, like get someone like Peter Shinkoda to be your lead.
Well, and
he's fantastic. Get him to do it.
The thing that's really sad about this is that when they do casting, they put race on casting, and if it doesn't say that they're looking for someone of color, they're looking for someone white, and agents will not send anyone.
Yeah. See, this is kind of linking in with Jason, go on.
No, what I was going to say, because you were talking about Olivia and those guys and the roles they're in, but you're forgetting one of the other tropes. It generally has to be a black person being oppressed by whites generally, and finding some sort of way out of that, which I will give you 12 Years a Slave with Chiwetel Ejiofor, fantastic. Yeah. But even in that movie, as good as that movie is, he's saved by a white man.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's a great movie, by the way. And Laputa, she won an Oscar for that, right? I think so.
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
And she's amazing. But the fact that this is how people can win Oscars, and when she played, what is it, Maz? Is that the character's name from Star Wars? When she played her character in Star Wars, she was so thrilled to be doing a movie that she wasn't using her body, because it was so physically and emotionally demanding to do 12 Years a Slave. So in order for these actors to get any recognition, they have to put themselves through hell. What does that say about us?
Well, think about like Django Unchained with the lead actress in that as well.
Jamie Foxx?
No, the actress, I can't remember her name. It's terrible. Mm.
But the one who played Broomhilda?
Yes, yeah. Ah.
But Django and Sam Jackson playing the houseboy, how fantastic was that role? And how does that not get nominated for Best Supporting? Yeah.
That was an amazing, amazing movie.
Django, to me...
Kerry Washington.
To me, Django Unchained doesn't fit into the Hollywood whitewashing because...
No, it doesn't.
Hate it. Quentin Tarantino actually made a freaking period film.
Yeah.
It was the same thing as what was the one with the
Inglourious Basterds?
It's
what we wish happened.
What we wish happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see the two of them as very much in the same vein.
Yeah.
In that movie, Leo won his Oscar for Revenant, and I'll give you that. But him or Sam should have won it for Django Unchained.
Yeah.
Revenant was a beautiful, beautiful movie. Best director, absolutely. Directed, gorgeous, gorgeous film. Acting-wise, it's not the film that should have got Leo an Oscar. He should have got it for Django Unchained or for Wolf on Wall Street.
Or Gilbert Grape.
Or Titanic.
Gilbert Grape years ago, yeah. But
I mean, like, I don't understand why he didn't win an Oscar for Gilbert Grape. That was amazing.
Because he was, like, 2 years old.
Still, Basketball Diaries, Gilbert Grape.
He's about 2 years old.
He's amazing.
All right, he's trying not to look that way. He's growing that beard and mustache out. Like,
it's not working.
He was so good in Django, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about a film which is still on my shelf, still in this wrap after buying it 2 years ago. Star Trek Into Darkness.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes. And because, yes. Go.
Benedict Cumberbatch or whatever his pronunciation is.
To play not Khan.
Yeah. Yes.
Khan!
Yeah.
Which was played by the wonderful Khan. Ricardo Montalban.
He's not going to be Khan. Oh, by the way, he's Khan.
You know what? Give JJ Give JJ a pass. He was trying to keep the surprise, and the internet just wouldn't let him. The internet.
I have issues with JJ, but I have to give big props to him for. In regards to Star Wars, he has he made the cast of Force Awakens pretty diverse, and he has said that he's going to bring characters of all sexualities in Star Wars.
I think that JJ is much better suited for Star Wars than he was for Star Trek.
He directed Star Trek like he was directing Star. Like you could see he wanted to be doing Star Wars. Yeah. I think in his Star Trek films.
I think
that was the whole point.
Yeah, I think that now this is my headcanon that I've mentioned before. Benedict Cumberbatch was not Khan. He used Khan's name. He was a different clone that was defrosted, and he wanted to strike fear in people's hearts, so he called himself Khan. He is not actually Khan, and that makes the movie much, much better. It's still fan fiction, but it's much better. But here's the thing. You've got a white person playing an Indian person. Now, Ricardo Montalban was Mexican, not Indian, but it was a bit better.
But he still technically was brown.
Yeah, he was brown.
Like, at least they gave him that, right? So, they're like, oh, well, we're not going to, well, we could cast a white guy, but you know what? Hey, this Hispanic guy, we can make it work.
And that's impressive considering the era, because this is an era when they had Natalie Wood playing a Hispanic person, you know, was supposedly Puerto Rican.
Playing Gandhi.
So,
yes, exactly. Ben Kingsley playing Gandhi. What the heck?
Or Ben Kingsley playing a Maori warrior in a game of in a Ender's Game, by the way.
Ben Kingsley playing the Mandarin,
which was a white guy playing the Mandarin. So that's okay.
If you look at that as a satire on that whole thing,
that was great.
Masterful, it was really well.
Stroke. That is a masterful stroke, because it's Ben Kingsley, Mr. White, playing the Mandarin, who is secretly a white guy.
Yeah. Alec Guinness playing a Japanese businessman. We've got William Dafoe playing Jesus Christ, who's supposed to be a Jew from the Middle East. The list goes on.
Breakfast at Tiffany's playing a Japanese
businessman.
I was just about to go there. I was just about to say, one of the biggest and most classic romantic comedies ever made, with Mickey
Rooney.
I love
that film, but every time it gets to that scene, I'm like, oh.
I cringe.
He's playing the worst. Oh my God, he's playing the worst.
I always cringed at that scene, and I didn't cringe enough until I saw, what is it, Enter the Dragon, the biopic pic of Bruce Lee's life, and you see Bruce Lee on his first date with Linda, and they're watching Breakfast at Tiffany's, and he's just so upset. Oh, by the way, that leads us into Kung Fu. It was supposed to be Bruce Lee, and they cast David Carradine.
So,
if
you want to see it, actually, if you want to see like kind of an interesting take on this in terms of kind of white guys being cast in Asian roles, there's a play that I think was off Broadway, but they actually made it into a YouTube short starring Chris Gorham, one of my crushes. And it's called Yellowface. It's quite interesting.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
So
yeah, it's good. I think it's in two parts on YouTube.
Let's not forget about The King and I, by the way.
So white in Asian roles, Jason, The Last Airbender and Dragon Ball. Go.
Oh.
All right. You had to bring up Last Airbender, didn't you?
I did, because I need to disappear, and when I come back, I want to talk about The Major.
So while
I'm gone, I need you to like spew vitriolic hate about Dragon Ball and Airbender. Go.
Here's the deal.
He poked the bear.
Japan. Look, one of the things I have been watching anime and Japanese things for a long time, so I've gotten used to their weirdness, because they have a weird enjoyment or weird fascination with Western culture. They will, like, prime example, one of the biggest, hottest new TV shows of anime was Attack on Titan. The primary cast in that show is all German and European. They even make a reference to the fact that Mikasa, one of the lead heroine of the story, is the last Japanese woman known in this world. And so they put her inside this place full of just Europeans and Germans. Hell, the main theme song of the show has German in it. Like, and so the Japanese have a weird, weird proclivity of just fetishizing the Western audience with Western characters. So when you look at things like Ghost in the Shell and how the Major and most of those characters, yes, they kind of look European. I would definitely say the Major is probably the most Japanese looking of the characters in that show.
Mm. I don't know. Bato's pretty Japanese. Well, no, I'm sorry. Their captain is the most Japanese looking.
First off, you point out a Japanese guy who's over 6'5".
Yeah.
Bato is one of the... But no, like, she is unapologetically Japanese in that show.
Yeah.
A lot of the things they talk about and a lot of the things the way they police and do detective work is very Japanese.
Yeah, that it's so culturally Japanese.
Very much so. And especially when they start talking about the out of body, you know, spiritual side of things with the internet and all this other stuff, especially like one of my favorite scenes in the entire series of shows and series of movies, because they redo it in both, is when Bato is sitting in the car with one of their partners and they're both jacked into the internet and they're just sitting there in this non-moving car, not on, they're just sitting there talking and they're reciting poetry back and forth to one another.
Yep.
It's a really, really good scene because it kind of gives you the entirety of the show and what it's about in that scene, because they're talking about this existential stuff and whatnot. And of course, spoilers at the end of that series or end of that movie, the major joins one with the internet and is like out there doing weird things. But yeah, like she's unapologetically Japanese. Then you look at The Last Airbender. That is a show all about non-white people. Every character, every nation. There's no white people in this show.
I've never even watched it. Like, I've got very small knowledge about it. And I remember when they did the trailer for the movie, and I've never seen an episode of it. And I was thinking, I didn't think there was white people in it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
In the universe of that show, the main character is a Tibetan monk.
Mm-hmm.
The main villains are the Chinese. The main character's helpers, like they're his sidekicks, are from they're
Inuits, aren't they?
Yeah, they're Inuit.
Yeah.
And then you get into other places, like you'll get into like the Earth Nation, which is basically like, you could say they're the non-Chinese or Japanese Asian persuasion. Like they're from, like, you could say they're like maybe Southern China or Korea or some of the islands maybe. But there are no white people in this show.
Yeah.
Like, they're unapologetic about it. There are no white people in this show.
Yep.
Then we turn to everyone's favorite, M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
And his take on this film.
And you'd think somebody with the last name of Shyamalan would be a little more sensitive to the issue.
At least there were Indians. At least there were Indian actors in the movie. At least.
So he only cares about one.
That is the only thing I can give him any sort of credit for. He made the Fire Nation from that part of the Middle East. And which is fine. But then when you stick the white, by the way, he sticks the whitest of the white as the characters. Although, but I will say, Aang was played by, is he half white? The kid who played... IMDb, come to me. Because
I don't know.
I just imagine you summoning IMDb like summoning.
It really is. I actually was just charging my phone because
all right. Noah Ringer. Yeah, he's Asian.
Yeah, so you got Indians, and then you've got him.
Yeah, but he was likely hired for his martial arts.
Yeah, he was. They said he was like amazing martial arts, but I mean, he's a terrible actor. He's awful.
Yeah. But they hired.
He's a cutie patootie, though.
But I'm really surprised the nation didn't have something to say about Avatar: The Last Airbender, because me and Jen were actually talking, because Jen grew up in Cake. In Cake, Alaska, which is Alaska has a really strong and really high population of Native Americans. And she actually being a white person living in a town full of Native Americans, actually, you know, she's been indoctrinated into the nation and stuff like that. She actually has gone through some things and whatnot. And she was talking about how the nation, like they, I'm surprised they didn't like set this movie on fire.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how often do you have stories? It's hard enough to get stories about marginalized groups. How often are you going to have stories about Inuit people? Very rarely. Yeah. And if they're anything, it's going to be like, you know, I can't think of it.
Well, can I mention as well, anyway. Tiger Lily in Pan played by...
Yes.
Rooney Mara.
Yeah.
I wouldn't watch it because of that.
How often are you going to have like this... again, this Native American character.
And when you, it's not just, it's not a, we're telling a story about Native Americans. It's, this is a Native American character in a story, and it's just a character. We're not, it's not, we're telling a historical tale. It's, that's what this character is. I mean, it'd be like if somebody took smoke signals and when they made the movie, cast it with white people.
So listening to all this, this is my thoughts on all of this as a broad topic, is that we're not as stupid as we used to be.
Yes.
The internet has made us very intelligent, and we're aware of all of these things now. And when Hollywood of the past said, hey, come watch this picture, it's got people you know, they're all white, enjoy it.
Lawrence of Arabia, we can understand because of the time it was in.
Right, and Chuck Heston playing Moses, from my cold dead hands, these two stone tablets, you know, we can all deal with it because it was the 60s and it's Hollywood and it is what it is. We are beyond that now. So
anybody accepted John Wayne as Genghis Khan, though.
So what we need to do is Hollywood needs it's just like Marvel and DC have said for the longest time in making all of their comic book movies, no one wants to see a funny superhero movie. They want to see serious, gritty, dark.
Now see
Chris Nolan style Batman movies. Then Deadpool comes out and flips it on its head and says, "Yes, we want to see funny." Well, guess what? We want to see multiracial. So when I hear that Scarlett Johansson is going to play the Major in the movie version of Ghost in the Shell, who, by the way, the character's name is Motoko Kusanagi, played by ScarJo herself, I will burn that film reel with fire if it comes to my theater. I am not seeing it. No, never, nuh-uh, not doing it. Not even when my favorite director of all, Luc Besson, the guy who brought me Fifth Element and Léon, which you people know as The Professional, and La Femme Nikita, and all those other movies. Now, you're telling me that this guy is going to bring the movie, who his entire shtick is powerful female characters thrust into a man's world. You're telling me that he's going to take Whitey McWhitechick and make her play the hardcore Japanese Motoko Kusanagi from Neo Tokyo? Nuh-uh, sorry, forget it. Burn in hell, die in a fire, I quit.
So, Tech, tell me how you really feel.
You on that.
By the way, Tech, I think you're being... But I would just like to let you know that now The Professional is now titled Leon : The Professional.
Yes.
Is it? Mm.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Check it out. It's on Netflix. Really good movie.
I don't need Netflix. I have the anniversary edition. It's so much better.
And to anybody here who understands the French language or doesn't mind watching a movie with subtitles, watch the four movies that Luc Besson did called Taxi. Do not watch the one with the guy from Saturday Night Live and Queen Latifah, Taxi. That doesn't count.
It's a different franchise.
The one set in Marseille with a Peugeot as the taxi cab. Le Carré, what's his first name? Anyway, those movies are amazing. Luc Besson can do no wrong by my books until he does Ghost in the Shell.
Give Luc Besson some credit. It's probably not his choice.
Yeah.
It's totally his
choice. He fell in love with another person that looks like Mila Jovovich. He has a type. He has a type.
Don't speak her name unless it's unless we're talking about Fifth Element, because she has done terrible.
The Joan of Arc movie she did was awesome.
The Messenger is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I will point you right to Blue Lagoon 2.
Why would you watch that? Anyway, so moving on.
I'll probably get knocked off the call for this, but I do like the Resident Evil films.
Shane, bad connection. I wonder what happened.
What's that noise?
But yeah, so let's talk about that.
I,
Go ahead.
Let's talk about this for a quick second. No, I am overruling. I am brown. I am brown and I am French. I am overruling the English on this.
So you have to yell at me, Tech.
I do have to yell.
She is part deaf, yes.
I am shouting indefinitely. Let's talk about this for a second. Let's talk about the not just blacks, but the Asian whitewashing and what they're about to do to Ghost in the Shell.
We'll see.
Yes, we were just talking about that.
Well, I wasn't here, so it doesn't count.
No, because like I was saying, the major's unapologetically Japanese, just unapologetically. And there's also another really, really Japanese series that's getting made. They're trying to make it into a film called Death Note. Mm-hmm. And they're casting white people for both those characters.
But this is about school kids, isn't it? And like one guy finds a book in school or something.
What it is a guy who's the son of a Japanese police officer. He's a detective. He ends up coming across this little black notebook called the Death Note. And basically anyone's name who you physically know what they look like and know their full name, if you write it into the book, they die. And so he decides to, because he sees how much his father struggles against bureaucracy and the Japanese law system to try to stop these criminals, you know, the Yakuza and things like that. Mm-hmm. So what he does is he hacks his father's computer, gets the files he has on all these criminals, and just starts going through them like hot knife through butter, just writing their names in these books. He experiments. Like he starts taking chances. Like he'll be like, okay, well, let's see if I can make this dude walk in front of a bus or make him write a message on the wall. And he becomes known as Kira. And they've basically, like in the manga, what happens is he works up a religious fervor to the point where spoilers, when he dies in the end of the manga, because he plans it that way.
What was that?
God, is that you?
He's agreeing with Jason.
Yes.
He plans it that way, and they hold a like mile-long procession through the streets of Tokyo in his honor when he dies. And so it's a very unapologetic Japanese show because it talks about Shinigami, which are the Japanese gods of death. It talks a lot about the morality that the Japanese have, because people are trying to say, yeah, he's doing good things by getting rid of these criminals off the street, but he is being terrible about it. Like he's murdering them. They're not getting due process. They're not getting trials. He's literally killing them. And so it talks a lot about that. And they're casting white actors for those roles, even though this show is unapologetically Japanese. And one of the actresses who actually spoke out about this on Twitter, because she talked about how hard it was to get acting roles as an Asian actress, even though she's a strong female character on a really hot TV show by the name of Teen Wolf. It is my guilty pleasure. Don't look at me strange. She is, here we go. Arden Cho. She plays Kira Yukimura. And her character in the show is unapologetically Japanese. Because it's a show about, they've taken Teen Wolf and made it a supernatural TV show where you've got like banshees and all kind of other stuff. Awesome. She's a kid.
So what'd she say?
She basically said, wow. She's like, wow, I struggled. She basically said, I struggled to get the role on Teen Wolf, and I look on the internet and see that you've casted these people as Asian characters.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, let's not forget when they were talking about making a movie version of Akira, and they were going to, instead of New Tokyo, they were setting it in New York City, and it was going to be starring all white actors. And thankfully, George Takei was like, I believe that's when he said, you are a douchebag. That's that where that.
You think Sitting in the Road, from. Huh? I'm it, Keanu Reeves. I'm gonna be Tetsuo.
The fact that it was gonna be the characters are Tetsuo and Kaneda in the streets of Neo Tokyo, and it was gonna be New York with Teddy and Kenny.
Get out of the road, huh?
Yeah. Oh my God, bruh. Get out of the road.
It was in 3 years.
Teddy, bruh? Where's Teddy?
It was in 3 years of development. It went through Keanu Reeves, Justin Timberlake, Robert Pattinson, and many others, and many Facebook petitions, and George Takei speaking out against it, and it still took 3 years for that project to die.
By the way, I will point you to the internet short that was made about Akira, starring the Asian actor who plays Kevin from Supernatural.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, I like him.
It is superb. Superb.
He'd be good in that. I got to look that up. That sounds really good.
Akira is one of those. Again, like in Supernatural, they love killing off women and people of color.
Yes.
And now they have four pretty white guys.
Oh, Rufus, I miss you.
Hey, Tetsuo. I'm Kaneda. Hey, Tetsuo. Get out of the road, Tetsuo.
So, I want to shift to a different perspective of Asians getting whitewashed. And there's a great episode of Aziz Ansari's show, Master of None, where he talks about whitewashing and everything. And it's him and another Indian actor, and they're both kind of blown away. Wait a minute. What do you mean Fisher Stevens wasn't an actual Indian actor in Short Circuit? And how so many people grow up thinking that guy was actually Indian, not realizing he was in brownface. No, he's not Indian.
Really?
Really?
Don't watch.
Please don't.
Wow.
I grew up on those movies and I enjoy those movies. But even as a kid, that dude is not Indian. Okay.
I'm showing Tech the picture of Fisher Stevens. I'm showing Tech the picture of Fisher Stevens without brown face, and he's just blown away.
Well, because that was one of those things for years I was saying that
he's the friend on Early Edition, isn't he?
Well, this character on Short Circuit was the entire was what the entire shtick of Apu Nahasimi Petalon was based on The Simpsons, and that this is what the entire inclusion of Asians into North American culture was based on, is now some skeevy looking white dude.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Wow,
he's
I'm
the lead
pissed.
In the second film. He's the lead in Short Circuit too.
Yeah, and the neat thing is in Aziz Ansari's episode of Master of None.
I'm sorry, by the way.
Why are you sorry?
I'm sorry.
Oh,
not
I'm sorry.
Ansani.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Sorry. My bad. I just know that Aziz guy. Ooh, peeking. Is that so many people don't realize that that guy was white. And how many times does that happen that people put up? And the thing that kills me, especially with this Gods of Egypt and Prince of Persia, is they're putting on brown face. Mm-hmm. They're changing their skin color. No, that is never okay.
I don't need to interrupt here, but I was must have been 12 or 13 when I first saw Short Circuit 2, and I was embarrassed watching the film.
Mm-hmm. Is he English?
Yeah.
No, he's Canadian.
Is he? Oh, on behalf of Canada, I apologize to all of you. Oh, my.
And did you know the same thing happened with The Social Network?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the guy.
Divya Narendra, who is of Indian descent. And Aziz had something to say about that. He said, these days, real Indian people, pop up way more in film and television. But fake Indians are still around more than you think. I love The Social Network, but I have a hard time understanding why the Indian-American Harvard student Divya Narendra was played by Max Mingala? Is that how you say it?
Mingala,
thank you. A half Chinese, half Italian, British actor. Mm-hmm. Truth. It's like when you have diversity in a story that you're telling, why would you change that?
You know,
in terms of just reminding me as well, like I have a friend who's a friend who's an Asian Canadian actor, and he's Canadian Pakistani, and he said to me once, he's like, I'd really like it if I got cast in something and I wasn't playing someone called Raj. The only roles he's getting are all these similar roles, and he just gets the same parts over and over again, and it's like, and he's usually like the tech guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And
you're hitting on exactly where I was going to head, because there's a movie starring my unadulterated man crush Idris Elba called Daddy's Girls. And mm-hmm. it's a great film. He plays a put upon black man who gets railroaded because he actually hooks up with a basketball player, one of the two, hooks up with a white character at a party after a big win. And
then Claire, she's got red hair, she's English. It's basically me. That's what you're gonna say, right?
No. I wish it was her from Luther, because oh gosh, she's
boy. I mean me.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking about the redhead who he is with.
No, you don't get Idris Elba. No, sorry. Get Idris Elba first. I call dibs.
And he basically what happens, he gets accused of rape, even though it was a mutual thing. And yes, he doesn't get charged with it, but he has to go through his life with that stigma the whole time. He has to deal with a crazy black ex-girlfriend who's the father of his daughters, which is where the title of the movie comes from. But he always has to play these roles. Mm-hmm. Like, he always has to play the stereotypical black ghetto dude.
Well, I laugh at that, by the way. Is one of the things that Ian Fleming said. He said that, you know, Idris Elba's too street to play Bond. Meanwhile, it's like, have you seen the man in his normal life? That man is not street.
By the way, they did a Screen Junkies, who do the honest trailers and stuff. They did a thing about that where they were talking about Ian Fleming saying he was too street, and they show the picture of Idris Elba looking like the freaking looking like the British Waldo.
Yeah.
Like,
with the beret and the scarf and the, yeah, I mean, come on.
You're like, yeah, this guy's too street. I get it. He's a DJ when he wants to be, when he's not acting in films, but come on.
The thing is, like, with Idris Elba, regardless of, like, the thing is, as an actor, I think he'd be so good as Bond, because he has this thing where he exudes charisma and intelligence, and he would rock a tuxedo. Come on,
can I make a fair assessment?
He's got this danger. He's got this underlying dangerous streak to him. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's what you need in Bond.
Yeah. Can I make a fair assessment that pretty much everyone on this podcast right now has a total thing for Idris Elba?
Yes.
Yes.
I've debated.
Tech, Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. All right, good answer. Everyone good agrees. Answer. All right, there we go.
I did an episode with T and Pip where we talked about some stuff. We got on the topic of Idris Elba, and Pip, T and Pip, they suggested doing an erotica podcast called Black Coffee in Bed, where it's just fan fiction about Idris Elba.
I like it.
Yeah. But you know, those are the type of roles that people of color get put into. Like, prime example. Denzel Washington, considered one of the greatest actors of this generation, didn't win an Oscar until he played a nigger spitting black cop
who was great in that film. I don't think it's his strongest performance. Again, it's like it's an Oscar because they feel like he should get an Oscar. It's just like Leonardo DiCaprio in terms of it's not their strongest performance.
I mean, because I saw him in Antoine Fisher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before that, and I thought that was a stronger performance than him in Training Day. And people,
I think he's just as strong as Tom Hanks in Philadelphia.
Absolutely! I don't know why he didn't win an Oscar for that.
And he has a more difficult role to play because he's playing the guy who starts off as unlikable, you know, because he's the guy that has the issue. I think Tom Hanks has the showier role, so he got more accolades, but Denzel Washington is just as good, if not better, in that film.
And here's the proof for me, and here's the proof that there's something wrong with us as an audience. It's that when we see Sam Jackson play in Star Wars as Mace Windu, and we all look at ourselves and say, yeah, you know what, it would have been better had he said,
by golly gee willikers.
Ah, why did you have to say that?
And, you know, had he said a lightsaber, the weapon you use when you have to kill every mother taco in the room.
Thank you.
See,
maybe there's something wrong with me, the audience. Maybe I've been indoctrinated into this whole whitewashing thing as much as I don't want to be. I'm smarter than this. I'm better than this. Wait, maybe no, I'm not.
Yeah. See, I blame Quentin Tarantino for that, and I blame it on his skill. Because Quentin Tarantino, he's a decent enough director. But what he excels at and what grabs our attention about his films are his dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
He is a master of dialogue. And when Sam Jackson says that, we loved it because it was a part of a monologue of just greatness from him. Mm-hmm. And if you look all through Pulp Fiction, there's just it. By the way, it's off of the Maltese Falcon. But anyway, it is a plethora of just wonderful dialogue. I mean,
everything Quentin Tarantino does is a ripoff. and he says so.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yes, and he's unabashedly open about it because he loves those films. Like, prime example, look at Django and look at Hateful Eight, which I recommend to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm looking. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
There you go. No, he likes spaghetti westerns. Kill Bill is an ode to old school martial arts films.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 80s action would be towards like Pulp Fiction and
Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, what's the other one?
Reservoir Dogs.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Reservoir Dogs. And so then you look at Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, so good. Mm-hmm.
And that's all the old war movies.
Yeah.
And Combat, the TV show and all of those things.
So and so when it comes to him, he makes such good dialogue. We get caught up in the dialogue. And that's what makes us think of Sam Jackson, because he does that crazy dialogue in that movie. And so we want him to say, if he walked on stage at the Oscars.
Well,
and
like he did in Snakes on a Plane. That's why they put that line in, because it's Sam Jackson's little.
Yeah, it's his catchphrase.
Tarantino moment, yeah.
That bad a movie. He actually slaps a cobra in that movie, which is
so. Getting off of cobras,
can I please talk about Marvel Nutty? Because Marvel.
We're gonna get there, but real quick, I just want to mention Denzel Washington has been nominated for an Oscar several times. The mm-hmm. only two he has won for is Glory, which was amazing, and Black Guys Got to Be Oppressed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Training Day, which just seems so weird. He didn't win for Malcolm X.
Oh, wow. Also got to think, Sam Jackson didn't win for A Time to Kill.
No.
Yeah.
No. And
he was amazing in that.
He was amazing in so many different roles, too. I mean, let's not forget him in, what's that movie? It's a Spike Lee joint.
I know the one you mean. I can't think what it's called.
It's him and Jada, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, amazing actor. Like, everybody makes him out to be like this street thuggy type guy. Meanwhile, he's done so many important roles, and the only thing he's ever been nominated for is Pulp Fiction.
So you're going to edit this out, but this is a moment for Jason and I. This was a thing from a Boondocks episode where the episode where Dr. King comes back to life. And they're like, they're going to do a biopic on Dr. King. Oliver Stone was attached to direct. Spike Lee was pissed.
I think I'll keep that in.
See, you know, it's funny you bring up Spike Lee. And that brings us back to the Oscars. He boycotted the Oscars this year.
Good.
Because one, he wasn't nominated for Best Director, and his film Chirac wasn't nominated. And Chirac is wonderful.
If you like
Spike Lee films, or as they say, if you like a Spike Lee joint.
I do, actually. I would say, on the whole, his movies are better than they're bad.
And Chirac is another one. It's really good. And Sam Jackson's in that. It's really good. And he wasn't nominated. But I think the biggest...
Do you know he's only been nominated twice?
This is where I'm getting at. The reason why... I think what's a bigger snub than Spike Lee and Chirac is Straight Outta Compton.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And it's a hypocrite moment on the Oscars, because Denzel won for Training Day, where he was literally playing a stereotyped version of one of the characters from Straight Outta Compton. Straight Outta Compton is a movie about a movement in black culture and hip-hop culture and musical culture and our culture as a country in the U.S., about four dudes from Compton who have something to say about white people doing stuff that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And Straight Outta Compton and NWA it's the biggest musical movement in my generation, of my life, period. Like, there's a bunch more before that. I mean, B.B. King, the Rat Pack, all that. There's stuff that, but for my generation, it's NWA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That movie shows just how much they went through, like dealing with the white music industry, where they have these white executives and these power brokers, like, you know, trying to outsmart them. And how is it not nominated? Like, how?
Agreed. Yeah.
But
here's another interesting thing, by the way, about this year's Oscars. So you said Spike Lee boycotted. He won an award. He was given an honorary award this year.
And
he's only been nominated twice.
which is dumb. Like it's basically because Spike Lee went on the news and said, yo, boycott the Oscars this year. There ain't no black people there.
And by the way, that answers the whole you're boycotting, but you weren't even invited. He was given an honorary award, which is normally higher ranked than being nominated for a film that year.
Yeah,
he was invited and he still boycotted.
But this is what gets me, and this is what has infuriated me the most in this whole thing, is that it's not the message, it's who says it.
Yeah.
And it's all based on this old idea, and we've all grown up past it. And the Marvel and the Marvel Universe and the movies they've put out and the new DC movies that are coming out proves the point that, well, nerds don't know what they want. We're going to tell them what they want, and they want to watch this. We can be funny in a superhero movie, and just like the Avengers proves that we can have a superhero movie make millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, and we can be successful. Proves the point with race as well, I think, that it doesn't matter the race of the actor or the race of the character, that we want to see these stories and we're smarter than what you think, Hollywood. And here's my point. We have been boycotting on the radio and on the air forever since it came out, the song Cop Killer by NWA. It is not allowed. But since the 60s, the song I Shot the Sheriff, bump, 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 but I did not shoot the deputy, has been allowed on the air because it was sung by a white guy. And that's okay, but a song about the strife that a black person goes through because I'm a cop killer is somehow not allowed. And somehow that message is different based on the race of the person who killed a police officer. I'm sorry for ranting. It's the same struggle. It's the same problem. It's the same strife. And it's the same thing with the movies. I don't care what the race is. I don't care who the person telling the story is. I don't care what it is. Tell me the story. I want to see Motoko Kusanagi as the major, not Scarlett Johansson. I'm sorry. Go away. I want to see someone Japanese. Thank you very much. Rant over.
Amen. Amen, brother. Amen.
Here and just a lesson.
It was,
you, sorry. You, just like say, you didn't like ScarJo before this?
No.
So, okay, you're peeking.
And also, it was not NWA who made Cop Killer. It was our boy.
Yes.
And our boy Ice-T who made Cop Killer. And it is still banned by the FCC, by the
right. way. Right. So I apologize for that slight transgression, but my point is still made.
Yes, but that's true. What is the difference between I Shot the Sheriff and I'm a Cop Killer? It's who's singing it. Let's move on to Marvel. Let's move on to Iron Fist. Claire.
Oh, let me just say another thing quickly. Sorry.
Yes, please.
I was just going to say, in terms of like the Oscars and boycotting the Oscars and everything, I actually spoke to my dad about this the other day because he was saying he was heard about it on the news. And he said to me, because he hasn't seen any of the films really that are up for Oscars or any of the films of the last year. And he said to me, you know, is it the case that there's been a lot of films, you know, and that it's just actors not being nominated, you know, like actors of color. And I said to him, I was like, I don't think that's the issue. I don't think it's that the, you know, there are films that definitely should have been nominated, like Straight Out of Compton. I agree. But it's that the roles aren't being written as well.
Yeah.
Particularly.
100%.
These strong roles are not being written. And that is part of the problem. So just the fact of kicking off that there's no films that are, or no actors that are nominated, or no films that are nominated for actors or actresses of color, I'm including like Asian actors as well, it is not the only issue. It's the fact that the roles aren't there in the first place.
Yep. So, absolutely.
I just wanted to mention that as well, because that's what I was discussing with him.
Well, and let's not forget that the people who get, all right, so Straight Out of Compton, we're just going to talk about that for a minute. It was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Writing. The SAG Awards, the people that are nominated, there's a lot of white people on that list.
Yeah.
How sad is that? Sad is that?
So I was sitting here thinking that one of my favorite documentaries, probably one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, is one called This Film Is Not Yet Rated.
Yes.
Yes.
Of the FCC. Or not the FCC, but the MPAA.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about we get a documentary of that nature, like This Film Is Not Yet Rated, but about the Oscars and the people who make up the Academy and how they choose who they nominate and who's nominated? Because I think back to a scene in This Film Is Not Yet Rated where they have the lady who directed Boys Don't Cry.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, and I know you're going to have to nut this out, but she
say it nicer.
She basically says, who the F represents me on that council? Because she's, if I'm not mistaken, I think she's gay. Mm-hmm. And she's got tattoos and short hair. And she's like, who on there looks like me?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
She's like, none of them represent me. None of them represent how I raise my kids or can tell me how to raise my kids because they're not me. They're not representative of me. Mm-hmm. So where's the person to ask that question about the Academy?
Absolutely.
Because from all I know or from the way I hear it, it's just a bunch of old white people going, well, you know, this movie back in the day would have been a big picture. I think Marlon Brando could have starred in that film. We'll nominate that one. Yeah. And then they just go on.
But let's look back at old Hollywood and how many people had to change their name in order to fit on the marquee.
Martin Sheen? Not even that old. Yeah.
John Wayne. Yep. His first name is Marion. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not going to be in a marquee with a name like Marion, love. No, you got to change that name there, bub.
Yep. How many names have been changed to hide ethnicity?
How many Jewish names have been changed?
Yeah.
Especially Jewish names.
That brings me on to something I want to bring up, actually.
Go ahead.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
Episode Far Beyond the Stars.
Okay. Which one's that?
The one was set in the 1950s.
Oh, yes, yes. That's when he it's like a meta episode where he thinks Deep Space Nine are these stories he's writing.
Yes.
Okay. That's a good episode.
It was arguably the best. And there is so much stuff in that. I mean, you've got the female writer having to change her name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've gone to have a photo shoot. And the two female writers and the guy that Avery Brooks plays, I can't remember the... Mm-hmm. The character in the... Bernie,
yeah.
Yeah, he has to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
The quote that I want to use, there's a line in the episode saying that they believe that black people will never get into space except to show in the white people's shoes.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, black people will never get into space except to shine the white people's shoes. What makes you think that you can have a commander that is a black person?
Iron skies. When the Germans on the moon find the black American astronaut and they don't believe that he's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they also use the N-bomb in that episode.
Yeah, I think they do. It's pretty good.
God bless Star Trek.
Yes, God bless Star Trek.
Star Trek has been a multicultural, multiracial thing
from the very beginning.
Since the beginning,
mm-hmm.
Uhura is my role model. She is amazing, thanks to the role of Uhura, we have black people in space. We have women, and we have people of color who are astronauts because she became a spokesperson.
And I don't want to harp on this, but you get your first on-screen interracial kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we wouldn't have Jessica. We wouldn't have the aggressive, awesome sex that we have on Jessica Jones if it wasn't for Star Trek.
And what I love is when you hear the behind the scenes stuff. So William Shatner will talk about how they were filming that episode, and the network said, we want Kirk to be able to resist, and they said fine, and they filmed it a bunch of ways where he didn't resist, and then at the end of the day, whenever he could resist, he crossed his eyes.
So they had to pick that one good kiss where the two of them went at it. Well, but back to Jessica Jones. I have to say, as a straight white male, how hot is Luke Cage?
Oh, my God. It's so hot.
Oh, my God.
Even my mom calls him the handsome man.
We talked about this on the Defenders podcast. Yeah.
He is so fine.
He's beautiful.
I'm not a fan of fanfic or Bishonen and Yaoi. But if you put the man who played Luke Cage,
You're thinking of Mike Coulter and Idris Elba together now, aren't you?
You're damn right I am.
And you know what? So are we all. We all are.
Mm-hmm. I'm fanning myself right now, Jason. I'm like, oh,
my. I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Shane will be in his bunk.
they've done a whole lot of like, we'll make this character gay, you know, because they're trying to bring in, you know, the homosexual culture and everything into movies and film. Can we just, you know what? I want Jessica Jones. Excuse me. I want Jessica Jones and this man to be together. That's fine. It's great. It's an interracial couple, which you don't see very often.
We'll get onto that in a minute, Jason.
Would it be a little more progressive if it was two black dudes? I'm just saying.
Yes, please. Yes, please. So let's talk about Iron Fist.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm doing a podcast on all the Defenders series on Netflix, all the Marvel ones, and we've covered Daredevil and Jessica Jones, and I'm a big Marvel fan, and I've been kind of following this whole thing about the Iron Fist casting since it started, which is as soon as they announced the series. So, with the Defenders, if we're looking at comic book-wise, we have Matt Murdock, who is a Irish Catholic white guy. Got Jessica Jones, who's a white female. You have Luke Cage, who's a beautiful black man played by Mike Coulter, who's beautiful. And you have Danny Rand, who's a blonde, sort of blue-eyed American guy, as far as I know. So the whole thing with Iron Fist is that he is the master of Kung Fu. So a lot of people, since they've started saying about casting for Iron Fist, have been saying about an Asian actor playing the role.
Yeah.
And I can see this argument from both sides, but the way I see it in terms of it casting is kind of like I said before, in that casting should be colorblind in a respect, but if it is a part that's integral to a character in a way, then you should stick to that. I think it can go too far in going, oh, we need to do this because we need an Asian character. We've just had it announced that Finn Jones is going to be playing Iron Fist. Finn Jones is a white British actor.
It's Loras Tyrell from Game of Thrones.
But Iron Fist in the comics an expat? Like he's a white guy, right?
Yes.
He's a white guy,
Wait.
But we've also, so a lot of people have been clamoring and been really angry about this and saying, oh, there needs to be an Asian. But there's a lot of people who are supportive. I'm one of them because, and I discussed this on the other Murdoch Papers podcast recently, because in terms of Marvel characters and superhero characters, if it's not something that's integral to the character, I have no problems with them switching the race. For instance, in the last Fantastic Four movie, fine. If you want to make Johnny Storm played by Michael B. Jordan, fine. Michael B. Jordan's an awesome actor. I love him.
He's the best part of them.
Oh, he is, definitely. Fine. Make him Johnny Storm. I've got no problems with that. I mean, if they're going to do it, then make
It's when you tell me that a character called the Knight of Flowers is going to play Iron Fist.
I think the actor can do it, though.
I think he can do it. I've not really seen him that. I don't remember him much from Game of Thrones, but he seems very charismatic in interviews.
If Wolverine can play the boy from Oz, the Knight of Flowers can play Iron Fist.
Exactly. All right, so true so, there. Yes.
In terms of like switching race or switching even gender in some respect, like in Jessica Jones, the character of Hogarth, one of the lawyers in the comics, is a straight white guy. In the show, they made her a lesbian. Fine.
Right. That's the antagonist from the other law firm.
Yeah, because it doesn't. It's not integral to the character. However, in terms of, you know, you're not going to cast a white guy as Luke Cage, because Luke Cage came from that time in comics, was influenced by things like blaxploitation and that, the same as Misty Knight. You've got a big part of the character of Matt Murdock is he's this Irish Catholic guy. So yeah, I mean, in the comics he's even redhead, so yeah, have a white guy playing. You have to have Jessica Jones being a female. With Iron Fist, I think you do have to have a white guy, because the character came from the whole thing of kind of like white guy karate. It's this privileged white guy who's completely out of his depth at first in this culture he doesn't understand at all. So I don't think you need an Asian actor playing it. And I actually said at the time when they before they'd announced it, I was like, I'd rather that they have, if you want to get like an awesome Asian actor in, then do a Shang-Chi series. Because I think if they cast an Asian actor as Iron Fist, they would have been less likely to develop the character of Shang-Chi, who is another Chinese character in the comics, who is also a master of Kung Fu. They've just announced they're going to have Shang-Chi in the Iron Fist series. Awesome. So they are going to do it. But there's been so much argument over the fact that they should cast an Asian actor as Iron Fist. But the reasoning behind it is just ticking a box to say, oh, well, we've got a white guy, a black guy, an Asian guy and a female. It's like, don't do it just because it's ticking a box.
Yeah, yeah, see, that's the thing with Iron Fist. Mm-hmm. It's a part of who he is. The fact that exactly. He is a white guy in Asian culture, like he's mm-hmm. he's out of his element. That is what helps make him the character that he is and that we know, especially seeing given the environment that Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones come from. It's a mm-hmm. very on the street type character. Like one of the, I think I talked about this on the Defenders podcast, but one of the things that I love is when Daredevil and Luke Cage crossed, Luke Cage tells Daredevil, because he knows mm-hmm. the extent of his powers, he goes, listen and see how many people in this apartment building are doing drugs. And he listens and he goes, none. He goes, okay, now listen to this block. And he goes, none. And he goes, mm-hmm. so take care of your own backyard first before you come to me talking about saving the world. And and I think him being a character out of place and out of his element and having to come to grips with that, being, you know, becoming accepting of their culture because, hey, you're in it. Deal with it, dude. Mm-hmm. Makes him a better character for when he does come back to the States and he is on the streets of, you know, the Marvel Universe, taking care of these bad guys and things. It makes him more ingratiating to the people around him and the people he's trying to save. Mm-hmm. And I think
that... And also saying about with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones in terms of a mixed race couple, Danny Rand, Iron Fist, is with Misty Knight, who's another mixed race couple, which is awesome.
And all, you know, and I think, don't they have a daughter? Don't they have a kid? I think both of those.
Yeah, they do, yeah. They both have daughters, yeah.
Is Misty Knight a mutant character?
No, she was inspired again by a kind of blaxploitation, kind of like a Foxy Brown character.
Oh, okay. I was confusing her with someone else.
She has a bionic arm.
And cool,
she's
cool.
Part of, and again, another character I really hope they bring in is in the comics, she's... one of the daughters of the dragon. It's Misty Knight and Colleen Wing, I think she's half Asian. I think she's half Japanese. I don't think she's full Japanese. I would love if they brought her in as well.
But that's cool. These are two characters that they can bring in because it's not owned by Fox. Awesome.
Exactly.
I'll say this. Have you noticed that only in these Marvel Max characters, like these off the beaten path of the yellow brick road that is Marvel, mm-hmm. do we get the full relationship? Like Jessica Jones and Luke Cage have problems. Like,
oh yeah,
but they're so hot.
Yeah, of course it is. I love them.
No, but their problems make them that much more real.
Yeah,
in the comics, Jessica Jones gave up being a superhero.
Yeah,
because she had a kid and she said, you know what, I don't want this life for her. Mm-hmm. And her and Luke had a problem because Luke was trying to help.
What was her name? Was it Equinox? I think
the daughter.
Yeah.
No, Jessica Jones.
Oh, it was Jewel.
Jewel.
The Nitrous, yeah.
Yeah, and Luke Cage and her have a problem with that because Luke Cage says, look, I can't turn the back on the city that has given me so much. Mm-hmm. You know, I love you, but we have to find a way to do both. And she's like, no, because I don't want to put my daughter in the danger that we face. And they have real problems.
Does Luke lose interest in her because he's totally a cape chaser?
Can I say the most adorable thing about the kid is that Luke Cage and Jessica Jones named their daughter after Danny Rand. Because they name her Danielle. And Danny Rand and Misty Knight name their daughter after Luke Cage because she's called Lucy. Aww. So because Luke Cage and Danny Rand are such BFFs, they name their kids after each other.
You know,
I'm making a little heart shape with my hands right now.
Tech and I have often discussed that if we ever had a son, we might name him Luke after his mom Lucy. So that's kind of cute.
That's
and,
cool.
And after Jean-Luc Picard, which is...
There's that too.
A great French superhero to all of us.
You don't see these real-life problems.
No, and
this is the reason why, like, I've repeated this point to death on every podcast I've ever been on. That's why I'm so drawn to the characters that are more the Marvel Max characters or the Marvel Street level ones, because I honestly feel like you can relate to them more. My
They're
favorite
more
character
human.
In any comic book is Daredevil. And a big reason, I mean, when I was younger, I was like, oh, he's cool. You know, I just thought he was cool. But he's been written over the years so much in terms of his battle with depression. He has a lot of mental health issues, and I've battled with depression as well. And the way it's written, it's much easier to write something like that for a character that is a street level character than Thor.
Yep. And you know, Claire, I'm going to totally spoil you slightly on X-Files Revival. Depression is brought up as Mulder is living with mental health issues.
But
it's a good in a good way.
Act that.
It's great.
Let's talk about this for a second. Let's talk about whitewashing and Marvel because we were there. So Jessica Jones, where they have David Tennant, the whitest of all white Scottish dudes, playing a purple dude.
Well, in the comics, the purple man is from Yugoslavia.
Right. Yeah. And playing a Czechoslovakian character, but purple. Of color and playing it white, but playing it well.
Purple of color.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's include all colors in our color spectrum, not just yellow, not just black, not just red, but purple is a color.
Well, that reminds me actually of a comic, a Green Lantern comic, and I don't remember which one. I think it might be Hal. I'm not sure. But the Green Lantern is confronted. It's during the 60s, and he's confronted by a black fellow, and he says, you know, I always see you standing up for the red people and the yellow people and all these different aliens, but I've never seen you stand up for the black people. And the Green Lantern says, you know what? You're right, and that's wrong. And I love that.
We do get my favorite Green Lantern later on.
Yes, John Stewart.
So, by the way, should be played either by
Idris Elba,
Ernie Hudson, Keith David, or Sam Jackson. Those
can you pick a younger guy though?
But see, that's the thing. Like he's Jonathan Stewart's not a young guy.
He's not? Okay.
No, he's an older guy. He's probably in his late 30s.
Oh, that's so old.
How dare you?
Oh,
go to hell and you die.
But what I'm saying is
Jason, I don't know what's wrong with the call. Somehow you're being disconnected.
Oh no.
He's not some 20-year-old. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's not some young 20-year-old hot thing. Like, he's actually this. He's because if I wasn't, because I think Claire can
get Chiwetel Ejiofor to play him.
Ooh, awesome. That'd be
although good. He's already doing a comic book character because he's in Doctor Strange. But
so
yeah,
he'd
be awesome.
They're talking about another Spider-Man movie, and I think that this is a perfect opportunity to bring the Miles Morales character.
Yeah.
Okay.
And everybody knows Donald Glover perfectly.
All right, but see, here's the thing: Miles Morales is Hispanic.
Glover's well, you know, he's Afro.
No, he's Afro
Latino.
Oh, is he? Oh, yeah. He's biracial. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah,
that's fine. But here's the deal: can we? Maybe I'm the small contingent in this, but I liked those last two Spider-Man movies.
I only saw the first one, but I think the Andrew Garfield one was quite good.
I loved Andrew Garfield as Spidey. I thought he was great. I thought the main problem with the films, and even with the first Andrew Garfield Spider-Man film, I was like, I love the cast. Mm-hmm. I love the way it looks. And apart from the lizard effects, the whole thing was the writing that was the issue. Because if the writing's bad, it affects everything. It affects character. It affects plot. That was my main issue, but the problem was that it affected everything. If they'd had that cast in a better written Spider-Man film, I thought Andrew Garfield would have been amazing.
So we've been going for quite a while, and normally I would wrap this up, but I just want to cover one quick thing. I do want to talk about the difference between whitewashing and converting characters in a privileged position to minority groups. So, for instance, when you take a traditionally white character and you make them black, or you take a traditionally male character and you make them female, how it's different. Yeah, Starbuck. So, it's different than whitewashing.
It's reverse.
So you're basically talking about the Kingpin conundrum with Michael Clark Duncan.
Yes.
Here was my reasoning behind it. When people were
directing
about it,
I think we spoke about this as well, didn't we, Jason, on Defenders?
I think so. Because my thing is, here's the deal. You show me a 6'5" plus 350, 400-pound black or white guy who can act, then you can put him in that role.
Well, and
who's Oscar nominated.
Yeah, Oscar nominated.
And again,
as a massive, massive Daredevil fan, like obviously grew up reading the comics since I was 10, was following the casting for the film when it came out. I do think you need a white guy, as I said, playing Daredevil, because he's traditionally Irish Catholic. Kingpin, yeah, he's always been white, but it's not integral to his character.
No. Exactly.
So when they cast Michael Clark Duncan, I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
If you've got Ben Affleck as Daredevil, who is 6'4", you need a guy who's going to tower over him.
Exactly.
Michael Clark Duncan, awesome. Yeah.
And if you've got a character who their character is traditional, you know, it has a waspiness, or there's something about the character that they have to be white, you can't do that. But when you've got a character that being white is not part of the character, that's a great opportunity to flip the script. You know, as we mentioned with Hermione, you know, J.K. Rowling did not write her black, but she never said she wasn't. And she never specifically gave Hermione a heritage to be white, that flipping it would be wrong. I mean, it'd be like changing, you know, Seamus Finnegan should probably be white, but Hermione can be black.
You know, or example, look at Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Irish guy. But no one complained when they put Morgan Freeman in that role.
Because he's Morgan Freeman.
The reason he's called Red, and they say in the film, maybe it's because I'm Irish.
I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, and Stephen King actually has a pretty good history of that, which makes me happy about the idea of Idris Elba being in the Dark Tower.
Well, you know, he has also a role of having very strong black characters in his stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Look in The Stand.
Mother Abigail.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Look at the Dark Tower series. My favorite character, or technically characters, is Susanna, the double amputee black schizophrenic gunslinger who during the racial times, like when races and riots were happening, she got hit in the head with a brick, spoilers, and gets schizophrenic, which creates Detta Walker, who's a spitfire of racial hate. She's the example of how far this can go the opposite direction, where she's a black character who hates white people, and she does it in the most hateful way. I mean,
Uncle Ruckus?
Yes, except she nearly screws an incubus to death.
Nice. Ooh, but that's the thing. Like when you've got a character, well, first off, we need to have all different facets of characters, right? Like there's not one way to play a black person. And that's one of the things that drives me crazy when I hear people say, oh, but they're not black enough. Shut up.
There's an example in popular culture right now of a person being way too black. And that's Cam Newton. He's gotten a lot of the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. He's gotten a lot of flack for being black. Like people basically, because he's a quarterback and that's a traditionally cornbread fed white boy position.
Oh, why does it matter?
Yeah.
When you see him, that's the thing. People see him hanging out with Jay-Z and Young Jeezy and Lil Wayne and Mike Epps and all these black stars out there in the world. They say that's not right for a quarterback.
Nope, because he's got to be white and he's got to be drunk. Like my boy, Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. And that was one of the persons I pointed out. I said, you know what? You guys keep saying, oh, Johnny, it's okay. He can go to rehab. You'll be fine. But as soon as Cam Newton does a little a dab, which is a dance that's popular in Atlanta right now, you crap your pants.
Meanwhile, so John can get drunk, kick the crap out of his girlfriend, and everything's fine. Oh, no, no. He just needs rehab.
But if Cam Newton hangs out with Young Jeezy, the rapper,
yeah.
Oh, God, he's a terrible quarterback. Why is he doing this? And it's a double standard, because when someone embraces their heritage,
mm-hmm. yeah.
it ruffles people's feathers really bad.
Yep. Yep.
Especially if they're in a non-traditional role for that person.
Well, because you know what? They want all their black people to be like Wayne Brady.
Oh, who's Wayne sake. Brady?
What? What? He makes Malcolm X look. He makes Brian Gumbel look like Malcolm X. Don't he, mother lover?
But that's the other thing, though. Like, there are some recent news stories, and I'm not naming names, where particular people are being accused of not being black, that they are just white with dark color. And that's also a problem, because I have a feeling my man Jason, being an otaku, might fall under the same criticism, but he is so not.
Yeah, you know, well, it's funny you bring that up. One of the questions I have been asked, I would say probably in the millions of times upon meeting people for the first time, is, did you play basketball?
Okay, dude, but it's not just because you're black. It's because you're 6'3".
And my response is, no, I watch a lot of anime, play a lot of video games. And they're like,
Jason, how'd you hurt your knee?
And I jumped out of planes.
No. Recently, how'd you hurt your knee?
I didn't hurt it. It's just.
How did you aggravate it?
How did you re-aggravate your knee, Jason? How did you do that? Please tell us for the audience. How did you re-aggravate your knee injury?
I was exercising because I'm a diabetic. Uh-huh. I need to exercise. So I was playing a sporting event. As an exercise thing.
What was that sporting event?
Was it with a ball and a basket?
It involved a peach basket and a slightly deflated leather sack of some kind.
I see. Let's go ask my friend Mr. Naismith from Toronto, Canada, I may add. How did he hear it? Well, I do believe that was a sport I invented. We called basketball. Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's seriously, like, and then they'll look, but the, and then their immediate response is not, well, what's anime or what video game? It's, but you're so big.
Right. Not well, only black you. Shaming, but fat shaming.
I'm like, and here's the deal.
Weren't you also in chess club?
Yes, I was. I lettered in chess, actually, because I did it for 4 years straight in high school. And since it was a competitive team and we won trophies and things, we went to letter.
You were the big, tall black dude that lettered in chess? How did you not end high school jammed into three lockers?
Because he can't fit.
6'3". But yeah, I let him in chess band. Thank you. Because marching band was a competitive thing, and when you do when you're on a competitive team for your school, you can letter in something if you do it for 4 years. And I did chess and band for 4 years. So
I do hate to tell you this, by the way, you talking about band and chess, you have lowered your ranking for the heartthrob of podcasting. Whoa. FYI.
If I put on nerd, the hipster nerd glasses, that brings me back up, right? Because that's the thing now, right?
I don't know about that.
What instrument in band? Because if it was flute, you go down two notches. Anything brass, you might go up a couple.
Well, it depends. If it's clarinet, you're way down.
Well, no, here's the deal. It evens out. Because
one time at band camp.
Here's the deal. Because I was such a nerd, and there was a thing called Sailor Moon out, and one of the villains in the current story arc was Alan the flute player, I played flute. I actually own my own flute. And I figured out on my own the notes for the flute song Alan plays in Sailor Moon. But when I got to high school, because I was 6'3" and had way too much size, they put me on bass drum and sousaphone, a.k.a. a marching tuba.
Yes, so sousaphone's awesome.
So I did all of those things. Yeah, yeah.
No, but sousaphone's cool because you don't even have to play any notes. You just have to go left, right, down, up, down, up, left,
and it's
right.
Cool, right?
Yeah, it looks awesome.
Jason, I remember us discussing the fact that you play the flute when you were on for Jessica Jones because of the rock flautist on the radio flautist. Show.
Oh, man, that poor put-upon assistant. Here, listen to this rock flautist. I've got to go talk to my pill-popping boyfriend. I'll be back.
Bye.
But no, it's, you know, it's...
Dude, I'm sorry. Sousaphone, the fact that you played an instrument named for John Philip Sousa, I don't think increases your points in heartthrob. Aww. I think it decreases them.
Nutty, Nutty, I need to disagree with you because it raises the heartthrob points for me.
Yeah, well,
being a fan of marching music, being a lifelong soldier that I am, having to march for a living, John Philip Sousa is one of my idols. Yes. The fact that this man, this beaming 6'3" heartthrob, who knows about all things Sailor Moon and anime, also
it
plays.
It doesn't help these two have
and
huge crushes on each
own
other.
Music. Anyone who can make their own music,
right? So,
also, To help my black cred, though, during halftimes at the football games, I would figure out how to play current hip hop things on my sousaphone. So,
there you go.
So, like, there's a lot of hip hop songs that came out at the time that had really slow, one note driven bass beats and melodies, and I could do a lot of those on my sousaphone. Like, there was a song by Trick Daddy and a couple other guys.
Jason,
and,
you're so really cute.
The cheerleaders liked it. Mind you, I was a 6'3", 140-ish pounds. Like, so I looked like I hadn't eaten in days and I could talk to the clouds. But, you know, they liked it. It's cool. It's the only time cheerleaders ever danced for me. It's fun.
Okay, so we've gone way off topic here.
Oh,
I'm bringing this back.
I've got another example kind of like the Dark Tower one. Okay.
Go.
So another example with the Dark Tower casting is they just announced, and I can't remember the actor's name because I'm a dumb, but the casting for American Gods on television and the character of Shadow, who is the lead, is being played by a black actor. And I can't remember his name, and I'm sorry. But a lot of people are kind of upset about that. But the character of Shadow, as written, is always meant to be this character who isn't any particular ethnicity, is a completely almost like blank slate and could be anyone. And the fact that you've got a character who has a close personal link with him being played by Ian McShane, who is a white actor...
Shadow is being played by Ricky Whittle.
That's it.
And by the way, Neil Gaiman has come out as super excited about this casting.
Yeah, absolutely. Because do you know what?
Oh, he plays Lincoln in the 100. I love him.
I honestly don't mind who plays Shadow. I love the book American Gods. As long as they're a good actor, I don't care who plays him. I really don't.
Nutty, you brought up untraditional roles for characters and characters who are white being made, you know, a person of color. We've mentioned it a couple of times here, but can we talk about the reason why blaxploitation films exist?
Okay, go ahead.
Such as Black Dynamite, which is an amazing film if you have not
it's
seen
so good.
Is that like Dolomite?
Yeah, I love
Dolomite.
You've got Dolomite, you've got Blackula, you've got all these characters. And people look at those films nowadays and kind of snicker and laugh, like, oh, they're so cheesy. But the reason those came about was because black actors weren't getting the roles in traditional films. You know, white guy karate is the reason why we have blaxploitation films.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, like, and oh, God, what's her name? Oh, the female blaxploitation actress. Thank you. She's amazing.
Yeah.
No, and we get characters like Jackie Brown from when she did films like that. It's because the reason they existed, it wasn't because they wanted to poke fun and show that, you know, white actors are getting all these roles. They were doing it, one, because of that, yes. But two, they wanted to act. They wanted to be in these action films. They wanted to be these badass characters kicking butt and taking names and having crazy car chases and toting really, really big ungangly guns. Like,
one of the greatest rap groups in all of history, the Wu-Tang Clan,
is because of this.
Yeah, exactly.
This was a bunch of guys who really liked this genre of movie who couldn't find any other way to express it because they weren't allowed in.
I mean, by the way, I would just like to say, names of members of that group, the RZA, the GZA, the Ghostface Killer, you know? And they also, by the way, they do restore those movies, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
They have their own line of kung fu films, like the what you call them, brothers, martial arts films. They resurrect a lot of those and put them out on releases, which is pretty great. And they also do commentaries where they're just smoking weed on the roof talking about these movies, which is pretty great.
Was Ghost Dog one of theirs, or was that Snoop?
No, Ghost Dog wasn't one of theirs, but the RZA did the soundtrack for Ghost Dog.
Okay.
By the way, Ghost Dog, Spirit of the Samurai.
Really good.
Really fun movie. Yeah.
Forrest Whitaker.
I know. Can Forrest Whitaker be in more movies?
Yes.
It's Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah,
I feel Lawrence Fishburne stole his career, like, because you got to think, like, you just got two older kind of light skinned brothers, like, they kind of could fit the same roles, but Forrest Whitaker just he had that eye problem and Hollywood just don't like it, and so Lawrence Fishburne won out. I feel bad.
It makes him interesting. I'd always prefer someone has an interesting face. It's like Rufus Sewell got his eye fixed, and he just doesn't look as interesting now.
I have a question. Oh, yeah. Forrest Whitaker's wife is almost as hot as Lawrence Fishburne's wife, which is Gina Torres.
Gina Torres.
Yeah.
Like, if you interchange those two, their careers could have relatively been the same. Like, I feel like there's a lot of that in Hollywood. Like, people.
There is
just
a lot of that. You see a lot more of that in white people Hollywood. We were talking about that this morning. Bill Pullman and Bill Paxton. Which is it? I don't know. They're the same guy.
Gary Busey and Nick Nolte.
Exactly. We were saying that too.
It's like every now and then.
And Christopher Plummer. Yes. I don't know.
You find yourself talking about Bill Paxton and Bill Pullman. You get into this huge argument. They're like, no, wait, no, that was Jeff Daniels.
Exactly. Well, and
Dylan McDermott and Dermot
Mulroney. Yes, like, exactly.
I have no idea which one.
I have such a hard time picking white people apart. I just have to say that because the generic normal looking white guy, they all look the same.
You know the difference between me and Shane, though, right?
I do know the difference between you and Shane. One of you has red hair.
To bring it back to untraditional roles, how does everybody here feel about a black or a female doctor? Because
years ago when they were saying about like recasting the doctor, I think before it was Peter Capaldi, or maybe it was when it was Matt Smith, and they said about Patterson Joseph, and I was like, oh, he'd be awesome. He's like, I don't know if you guys know him. He's not that well known, but he's done consistently great work. He was in the TV adaptation of Neverwhere, which is a Neil Gaiman story. Oh, but he's a really good comedic actor.
Is he a little too pretty to be the doctor, though?
I don't know. Well, David Tennant, I mean, I love
him. Yeah, but David Tennant's not really pretty. It's his acting, it's his charisma that makes him
pretty. Idris Elba as the doctor.
Yeah, Idris Elba is one of my picks. Helen Mirren is one of my picks.
I just wanted to bring it up because we made the joke on the podcast I do with T and Pip, where if he did regenerate and it was into Idris Elba, he could then look into the mirror and go, I have finally achieved perfection.
What about Joanna Lumley?
Joanna Lumley would be awesome because she was the doctor in a comic relief sketch, wasn't she?
That's right. She was the doctor. I was trying to remember, was she the doctor or the master? But yeah, she's like, I have Dalek lumps.
You know, if they had someone play the doctor, the doctor regenerated, and they didn't announce it to the audience who he was going to regenerate into, who's going to be the new actor, and you watch the episode and the doctor regenerated and was a woman or was an Asian actor or was a black actor, I would just go, huh, that's cool. I hope they're a good actor. I have no problem with it.
I think them announcing who the doctor is stupid.
Can you imagine? Oh, exactly. My friend was like, can you imagine Hayley Atwell as a doctor? And I was like, oh my God.
Don't
talk about Hayley Atwell, please.
As long as it fits with the role of the character, I think this is what we've been saying the whole time. Stay true to the character. As long as the character loves humanity, falls in love with his companion, hates the Daleks, and has this sort of weird relationship with the Cybermen, and this even weirder relationship with his blue box, I think we'd be okay with it. Yeah. It's if they completely change the character in some sort of weird
patronizing pat on the head kind of way, we'll make them black this time just to patronize all of you black people.
Exactly.
I think because we'd all get mad.
It's just ticking a box.
Yeah.
It's because I've got no problem with changing, you know, with them like going, oh, look, you know, we've done this and we've cast this person. But if it's just ticking a box, then no, you should be casting. It's the same thing with actors with disabilities.
Yes.
Yes, sometimes you have to cast them for a particular thing. But you know what? We live in a society where there are people with disabilities and there are people who are different colours and there are people who are different sexualities. So why can't you just go, oh, we need this actor to be this person in this film. Let's just cast the best actor, whether, you know, it doesn't matter who they are.
Exactly.
It really frustrates
there's an independent film that I've watched, and it's called Making Change, and it's the only movie that has come out. It is written and directed by people on the spectrum and acted by people on the spectrum.
Oh, wow.
And it's fantastic. And it only goes to show that you don't have to hire a neurotypical to play someone on the spectrum. There are people out there that can do a good job. You just have to look for them.
I'm so glad you brought that up because unlike the rest of the world, Nutty, you're going to have to forgive me because I can't say this any nicer. Jurassic World can go
frag
itself.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Because Jen in Alaska worked as an assistant on school buses for children on the spectrum and children with mental disabilities. She was trained to deal with seizures and outbreaks and outfits and all this other stuff. And we both are sitting in the theaters watching that movie. And we looked, I swear, it was timed perfectly. We just look at each other and go, that kid's on the spectrum. And so after the movie, we go look it up, and the actor himself says, yeah, they were going to make me an autistic character, but then they decided, nope, meh, scrap that. And so basically his autism became a superpower.
Oh, no. And that goes to the whole how the autistic child is the replacement for the magical Negro. And that's a whole other episode, but we need to wrap this up.
And oh man, that movie can go screw itself. Oh,
because I didn't like the movie just because I thought it was a bad movie.
You sad that Jeff Goldblum wasn't in it?
I was thrilled. Well, that was the only good thing about it.
By the way, can I admit that I've got a slight man crush on Jeff Goldblum? Because
no,
because I watched him in that Fly movie and he was cut from the gods. Like
that's the word. Nutty knows this, okay? The Fly, I can sit and watch, and when there's all the gore, I'm fine with gore because I sit and go, oh, that's really cool. I wonder how they did that. Oh, that's awesome. So I'm looking at it, admiring it from a technical level. You know, I can sit and watch an autopsy. I don't mind gore. It doesn't get to me at all. Jeff Goldblum, though, just half-naked Jeff Goldblum doing sweaty gymnastics.
It's one of Claire's fears.
I honestly feel... It's actually a phobia. It's like it's genuine phobia.
She has Goldblumophobia.
I really do. I'm not even joking, Jason. Like,
such good.
And do you know what? When I went to LA a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, to visit my friends who live there, we were walking down one of the streets, and my friend Amanda just starts laughing, and I was like, what? And I was talking to her, and she just like nodded to look ahead, and I looked ahead, and Jeff Goldblum was obviously doing theatre. Like locally, because literally maybe 3 or 4 times a block, there was a giant picture of his face. So I'm looking down the street and there's about 50 Jeff Goldblum faces looking at me, and I wanted to throw up on the spot. It's actually a physical thing. It's like, oh, he freaks me out so
much. How could you say that? He was gorgeous in that movie. It was like Thor incarnate. Like,
okay, enough about Jeff Goldblum.
Sorry.
Okay.
About Jeff Goldblum.
Yes,
we have been talking for 2 hours now, and this editing is going to suck. So,
Nimlas forever.
I hate you so much. You're editing this. I'm going to make you do it.
I haven't mentioned my man crush yet. Everybody else has.
Go ahead. Who's your man crush?
Kyle MacLachlan.
Who?
Oh, yeah. Oh, do you know what, Shane? There was a guy. I'm sorry, Nutty. There was a guy who came into my shop today with his family, his wife and his daughter. He was like the British Kyle MacLachlan. He looked the spitting image, and I was properly crushing. I actually, like, almost needed like a little to like wheel my tongue back into my mouth because I was just like, oh my God.
Holy crap.
As a ew, Shane, that guy, he's always the creep.
Karl McLaughlin's gorgeous. Oh, Karl McLaughlin, Shane, my two first crushes ever. Karl McLaughlin and David Bowie.
Okay, look, David Bowie, I got you.
Look up the did you mean, because I probably spelled it wrong. I spelled it with an A instead of an I.
No, it's the right guy.
Look up Dale Cooper in Twin Peaks, Nutty, because that's Karl McLaughlin in his prime.
Dale Cooper, Twin Peaks.
Dude, Karl McLaughlin now as an older actor? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I still would. Hell yeah.
I will have to watch Twin Peaks because all I've ever seen him be is like the sleazy guy or the creepy guy. So
Showgirls.
or Sex in the City.
Don't bring up Showgirls. That's a bad movie.
So
now that
we've mentioned everyone's crushes.
We didn't get to mine. Jason Banks.
Already mentioned that. Actually,
I'd mention it again. Hey, Jason, what are you doing after this?
Crushes all of you guys. I love you all.
Aww.
And we all know that Jason has a huge man crush on Tech, so that's just known.
There's photos of me humping him, in fact.
It's guy love between two guys.
Hey, I'm an otaku, so we know about the yaoi, right?
Absolutely.
So, we all can agree that whitewashing is bad.
Boo.
We need to put an end to it.
Yes.
We need to stop watching movies that have been whitewashed.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
No matter how cute Emma Stone is.
No, dude,
talking about Aloha, where she played half Chinese, half Hawaiian, half Japanese? Oh, my God.
Yeah. So
wow. Really quick, Maddie, really quick. What is the over-under that everybody has here? What's the over-under that the Oscars try to fix it next year?
They're going to go way overboard. They are going to go completely. Completely to the wall. They're going to go completely nuts, and they're going to pander to the crowd, and it's going to get hashed at, yelled at even harder than they were this year for ignoring.
I do know already they're making decisions and they're making movements, and they are basically saying if you are a white male over 50, you're no longer part of the Academy. So people like Bill Mumy and Stephen First have been removed from the voting academy, which make them upset because they're like, wait, but we were the people voting for the minorities.
Man, by the way, how white of a name is that?
What, Bill Mumy?
No, the other
Stephen First.
Last name's First. Like,
oh, First. Yeah, that's right.
First with a U, though.
It's definitely something that they're working on. I would not be surprised to see another white Oscars, though. I have very little hope.
I got to agree with Tank. I think they're going to tear their nose off despite their face and just go crazy. Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Which is just as bad.
I wouldn't even be surprised if like 75% to 80% of the
Look, the Wayans brothers movie got nominated for an Oscar.
I think if somebody did a Double Mint commercial in the year, but they were the only black person in Hollywood, they're going to win an award for something. Everybody is going to win something for everything.
I think it's going to be really bad.
All right, so let's quick go around, and we're going to sign off because, like I said, it's been 2 hours. Where can people find everyone? Jason, where can people find you?
Oh, man. You guys can
Idris Elba.
Yes, you can find me clinging to Idris Elba's leg while he drags me down the street. you can find me on my podcast at the TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com. It's TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com with a 2 because I thought I was being unique and funny and cool. And then I realized there's like 1,000 people.
Yeah, you're not unique, funny, or cool.
No, not at all.
And Claire, where can people find you?
You can find me on Intro to X, which is an X-Files podcast. We're going through X-Files for the first time. If you're very precious about X-Files, don't listen to us because there's a lot of stuff we don't like and a lot of stuff
they kind
of
hate it.
You probably won't. We do love it. We just love different things.
You love it.
To what the fans like. And you can also find me at the Defenders podcast where we talk about the Marvel Netflix shows. If you look on iTunes, it's the one that has lots of episodes, not just 2. And it's not the religious one. I have to say that because there is another Defenders podcast that has two episodes, and there's one that's all about religion.
Yeah, or go to defenderspod.com.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And...
thank you, Lottie. You can have a job.
Well, I just know it because Robin said it like 2 hours ago. And Shane, where can people find you?
Deep breath here. You can follow me on the Red Dwarf Introcast, the Prisoner Introcast, the Lex Introcast. You can also hear me on an upcoming podcast about the Time Tunnel. You can also hear me on regular guest slots on the Clone Dance Party. Are You Telling Me? And Are You Telling Me Porkies?
I'm going to have to ask you about that one later.
He's a busy man.
He is, and he has a job.
He has a thing
lots
that he
of
does.
TV watching.
And hi, I'm Tech. You can find me attached to Jason Banks' leg as we are dragged down the street by Idris Elba. I will be the pasty brown guy not complaining. That is me.
But what you haven't said is Idris Elba is attached to my leg. So
yes, indeed. Hurrah! So find the Idris Elba train going down the road.
You'll be the one cursing in French.
Yes. So there will be redheaded woman, black dude, and then guy swearing in French. That'll be me.
I think you
and
forgot
what,
one of the black
dudes.
What
you haven't mentioned is I'm going to be stuffing her into a taxi.
And you can find Tech and I over at nimlas.org, nimlas.org. Ding. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
And goodbye.
Wouldn't you love to convert your favorite comics to audio to hear them wherever you go? That's what the Vox in a Box podcast gives to you. Every week, the Vox in a Box podcast covers a new story of the X-Men. Each episode covers a new comic from the X-Men universe with Cyclops, Storm, and, of course, Wolverine. Go to iTunes today and subscribe to Vox in a Box for free. Or for more information, go to VoxBoxComics.com. Vox in a Box. Putting the voice in comics.
I'm Claire and I'm white. Yeah.
Nutty Bites is produced at Nimlas Studios. You can find us on the web at nimlasstudios.org. This work is created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported International License. What that means is you can share it, you can send it to your friends, you just can't make any money off of it, you can't change it, and you have to link back to me, my site, and everything. You can comment and send feedback by going to nimlas.org/nuttybites. You can go to facebook.com/group/nuttybites. You can call the comment line by going to 347-NUTTY42. Or you can find me on Twitter. You can search on Google+. You can search the web. You can find me everywhere.